Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 87. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you pulling up today?
Pretty good, man. A few drinks last night, a few work drinks. And here I am.
Still coffee, drunk.
Coffee, tea, water, like hot water, Asian style. And just normal water as well. And Powerade.
Oh, fuck me.
And still here. Still rolling, man. Last night.
Jeez, you're struggling.
Okay, guess what? They say don't drink and drive. What about drink and review? I reviewed Harley Quinn last night. A few drinks. Made a few comments. A few rants in my review. I hit the word count easily. That was one secret. I found the word count came easily. Quality down.
I'm just amazed that... I mean, you're not kidding when you say you had a few. Like, there was literally three.
Four gin and tonics, thanks. And a lemon line of beers.
Yeah, exactly. And that's enough to put Dave under.
I'm not sure if it was three or four. I kind of lost count. I was pretty drunk at one point.
Yeah, I noticed. You were struggling there for a
while. I'm an excitable little guy when I get to have a few drinks.
Yeah.
And then guess what happens then? Sleepy. Sleepy Dave comes for a little visit.
You hit that on the train on the way home for a little bit.
Yeah. Sleepy Dave.
Just low energy Davey.
Yeah, get his pillow out and just have a little bit of a nap. Whereas you, Stu, I mean, I watched you, it seemed like you were just drinking water, but like you weren't, but it was like had no impact at all. I didn't detect any difference at all. You're just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a bit to get me
on. I was going to say, Stu, you're a bit of a seasoned drinker. You did, like, at uni, I remember, you were in engineering for a while, weren't you? I remember the engineering guys always drank a fucking ton.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they know how to drink.
That's one thing I do remember.
They know, they really know how to
yeah,
drink.
Yeah, like, when they had, like, their, whatever they called it, like, kegs or whatever they called their, you know, meetups.
Yeah.
It was just like, Jesus, these guys are serious. Like,
yeah, that's very true.
They're not messing around.
Australians in general love a drink, but
yeah.
Engineers, they really know how to drink.
I know, whereas I am a lightweight when it comes to that stuff. Now, we have some, the first poll results are in Planetary versus Captain America Fallen Sun, Stu.
Yeah.
Is that we, just to remind listeners, we're doing, Stu and I are doing our top sort of seven favourite books, just our personal favourites, and it just so happens that we start like at down at seven, and we just, so, and then we put the two that are against each other up on our polls on our Facebook page, and I shared it to a stack of pages. We had around 400-ish votes, something like that. The results were 53% Planetary and 47% Captain America. That was pretty consistent with the whole poll. Like, it never pulled away either side. It was 53. It would briefly be 52, then back to 53. So, I mean, a very close poll against you. Like,
yeah, another really close poll.
And a lot of comments. Most of the people who commented were pro-Planetary and were kind of like, I can't believe this is even a poll. The thing is, Planetary is, it's kind of a bit of a weighted poll. Like, Planetary is acclaimed as a critic's choice. Warren Ellis at his best, John Cassian art, against an event comic, which is a very good event comic, but it was just, like, what I found interesting is two completely different styles of comic, really, almost, you know?
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting is Planetary, while it's the better comic, critically,
it's a lot less.
Is also the far less read comic.
And less well-known.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's actually, that helped Captain America stay in the game. Because Marvel boards and stuff, like plenty of them, like Drew Geraci said, Captain America Fallen Sun loves it, you know? You know what a Marvel head he is. Planetary is an interesting one, though, because Planetary is actually, we'll do it on the show at some point, it's a critique, not even a critique, it's an examination of comics themselves. So he does, like, the Fantastic Four. He kind of breaks them all apart. Like, the whole thing is kind of like a meta critique on comics. That's the whole point of Planetary. Like, it's an excavation of that, amongst other things, but that's one of its primary sort of thing. So it's fun. Like, he does Thor's hammer, for example, and Wonder Woman's lasso, and Superman's, you know, and he does them in sort of a different context, kind of examining it all.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting comic. But anyway, so, I mean, regardless, Stu, I mean, I'll take the win. Much like the Aussie cricket team last night. Might not have been convincing, but I'll take the win. Which puts me one up, Stu.
It does. 1-0.
I'm feeling very, 1-0 very Dave good going about into Captain's Call coming my way at the end of this.
Going into round two next week. So.
And we're not putting the poll up this week. Is that right? I'm not doing it after this show.
No, we're not. We're waiting a week, and then next week we'll put up the second
poll.
So we have
no point revealing.
Which is our sixth pick.
We were no point revealing yet what the six picks will be, yeah? Is that right? No. Okay, good. It's also good because I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm glad there's no idea what's going on.
I was like, that's handy, actually, because yeah. I don't actually know. All right, well, yeah, so I mean, any concession speech, Stu, anything? Or, like, just going to take your lumps? So far, the polls have been hurting you. Kind of like, it feels like, you know, I'm the... And also, I'll say this. I didn't do any coffee votes. Like, no, I got no one coffee for votes. I didn't even give my opinion. I stayed very, very neutral. Yes, it was hard, you know. And especially when people were chiming in. But I also didn't do much. I didn't do as much. I was trying to find the right balance between sharing it to get... It's interesting. Sharing it on pages to get people interested enough to vote, it's kind of... I think that's a technique I'm still working on. If you're not going to come in with a heavy opinion yourself. So I'm going to work the next time on more what we're doing. Because people are going, why is it this too? There was no context for some people. Like, they were like... Why am I picking between Planetary and Captain America? They don't seem similar comics. And so then I would say, oh, we're on, you know, Signal of Doom poll. We're doing a top seven, the two hosts doing a top seven, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I had to sort of work. I got a bit better at the end, but it was just kind of like, because I wasn't coming with like an overt opinion.
Yeah.
To sell it like, you know, so I'm going to sell it slightly differently next time just to get more people voting.
Like you did for the first poll, which...
Well, yeah, I mean, I shared this one to a lot of pages too. Don't get me wrong. I shared it to a lot, but I didn't have quite as much interaction. Anyway.
Yeah, because we also do have some rules that we can't post to certain pages and we can't...
Yeah, I mean, I posted...
Provide our opinions.
Yeah, and I didn't. I didn't at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now, turning to news, this is interesting. AMC will continue the Rick Grimes story post The Walking Dead with a series of movies, Stu.
I'm not sure you're using the right word there. Interesting, really?
I think it's interesting.
Waste of time and money, maybe?
Well, I know. Okay, but let me get to the news. Andrew Lincoln will keep his hand axe-wielding ways within the Walking Dead universe a little longer. The series veteran has signed on to continue playing the iconic character in a series of feature-length film projects for the network, AMC. It's really important for the audience to know that we're going to be continuing to tell the story of Rick Grimes in these AMC studio original films. We don't want this to be like, oh, well, he'll be back on the show any moment now. We are telling Rick's story in another medium, and it's going to be these AMC original films. So three of them centered around him. Basically, he leaves on a helicopter. I haven't watched it yet. He leaves on a helicopter at the end of the last episode where it looked like he was going to be left for dead. So I do think it's interesting because, we do know that Walking Dead's numbers have been down. We know that there's...
Massively down.
Yeah, frankly, Andrew Lincoln is must be doing nicely out of this. Like, he's out of the series, but then he's signed on for these three movies. And they're also saying that there'll be more movies if these are successful. Like, you could be looking at Michonne movies, you could be looking at, you know, all sorts of movies, Daryl movies, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think, actually, as a fan, I actually am interested. I think it could be quite interesting if with the budget they would have to do three movies as opposed to, like, you know, 12, 13 shows. You know, compress it down.
I mean, it's an interesting tactic to get people more invested in the TV show again.
And taking...
Because they've had waning numbers for years now.
Exactly, it's been dropping for at least the last three seasons.
Downhill slope for years. So,
but he is very popular, and I think the show... I was very interested, just as someone who watches the show, you take Rick out of that show, it's going to leave a gaping hole. And that's still going to happen. But by having him still in the universe and exploring new regions... It opens up some new story ideas. Like, I'm open to it, to be honest. But I do think that it still means the show itself is going to have to compensate for his, you know, absence, basically. It's going to put a lot of weight on the other members, basically, to stay interested.
Yeah, and I don't know... Because, I mean, let's assume it takes 2 to 3 years to get a movie up.
I don't know yet.
Because clearly they're not in pre-production or anything yet. It's still very early days.
I would think next year they'll probably try to have something up there. Like it's on the channel. Like, so it's like I don't think it's a theatrical release, although there's AMC theaters, so maybe it's going in the... Maybe that hasn't been announced yet. Because there's AMC theaters in the States, so maybe it's going into those. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, they might be just filming a feature-length TV episode. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it's not really announced. That's all they've announced. They're doing three movies. They were blurry on whether it was a theatrical release. But considering they already screened Walking Dead episodes in those theatres, like that's, you know, there are certain theatres in the States that screen the Walking Dead episodes every week. I would anticipate it'd be going to AMC theatres if they're doing a three, you know, full feature-length
movies. Yeah, it will be. My question is it going to be a movie or is it a TV movie? That's the difference.
I think it's
going to be screened at AMC, no, regardless. That's it.
Apparently, they're going for like what Game of Thrones is going for with the last season, 6 90-minute kind of movie length TV shows, basically.
Right.
That's the kind of thing they're trying to do, it seems.
See, that for me won't help them much at all. Well, because they're not branching out platforms. If it's staying in the same format, same platform, same actors, it's just longer. Everyone's saying it's
him and other people.
But the problem with The Walking Dead isn't that there's too much or too little Rick. It's that the episodes are too fucking long, and they need to shorten it up.
I know.
AMC is announcing, well, we're going to make them longer, and everyone's like, yay? Are we meant to be happy that we're getting more of what we don't want?
Also less of them, though.
We're getting the same amount of time, just 6 episodes that are twice as long as opposed to 12 episodes.
It's 3 movies. So 3
Rick Grimes. Same idea. Like, they're still putting the same amount of minutes in front of you.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what
It's going to be 3 sittings instead of 10 sittings.
Well, one of the problems with The Walking Dead is they pad a lot of time for budget reasons. Like, it's fairly obvious. In some seasons, it's horribly obvious. Like, they've only got a certain amount of budget to do different things, and they pad. Like, season 2, for example, is all padding until these awesome 2 episodes at the end. And various times through the series, there have been this series treads water. I'm hoping by having 3 movies, they've got a budget that they can spend in these movies, and we'll see how it goes. Like, I'm hopeful. I'm sort of more interested than anything else. Like, what to do with Rick when Andrew Lincoln was leaving was a huge question. Like, do you kill him and he turns into a zombie? That's what I thought was going to happen. This I didn't expect. This actually slightly took me by surprise. Because I was like, it's going to be really hard for him to ride off into the sunset. Well, however it's happened, I haven't watched the show yet. That's what happened. He basically rode off into the sunset in a helicopter. And then he turns up. You know, they can explore different regions of the world and that kind of thing. Like, there are stories to tell, I think, that could be interesting.
Yeah, but the way they've tried to do that is through Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, which...
like, that's what they've attempted in the past.
Which I've given up on, but I've heard has gotten better.
I mean, I've heard that, but it started in such a poor place.
I would say it was probably we stopped watching out of just like, this show has no direction. It almost felt improv at times. Like,
I don't know. I mean, for me, the whole property of The Walking Dead at the moment needs an overhaul to kind of fix itself.
Yeah.
And if they announced a theatrical release movie that tied in...
sure.
That would absolutely drive people back to the franchise.
Now, I think there's a lot of question marks over exactly what they mean by this. They haven't really clarified if this is, like you're saying, like you could go down there like you could watch Avengers, you know, at Hornsby Westfield. Is it going to be turning up there? Is it that wide a release?
That's what I'm talking about. A wide release zombie flick, which has been successful in the past. Yeah. You look at like 28 days later, 28 weeks later.
World War Z.
Yeah.
Day of the Dead.
Those sort of movies that have been very popular, you throw Andrew Lincoln in there as the lead.
Yeah.
And you run it linked enough to the world.
Sure.
That you get quite a bit from it if you're a fan.
Sure.
But essentially a standalone movie so that you can get other people in.
Hmm.
And then you kind of drive them to the TV show at the end.
Or you've got what it could also be, which is just a TV movie, basically.
Yeah, which just sounds terrible.
Yeah, which is, I think, more likely, frankly. I think it's going to be a TV movie with a limited release in the States. That's what I think we'll get.
Yeah,
I don't think they've announced it fully yet. They haven't actually announced it, like, what it entails. But considering there are AMC theatres, you would think it would get in all those theatres. Like, I think that's a major chain in the States. Yeah. Like, anyway, we'll see. Now, Stu, this is an interesting one. Stu and I discussed this a little bit off air. This is Bob Iger came out. Uncle Bob, your friend Stu, came out and announced Rogue One gets a prequel TV series based on, I don't have the guy's name here, but he's the spy that rebel guy who dies to Jen Erso at the end of Rogue One. You know the guy I'm talking about. He's basically the other male lead who comes in. I don't have his name off the top of my head, but it's based on his story, Stu, in the lead up, sort of like in the lead up to Rogue One and all the dirty dealings he did against the Empire. And you recall, he even says in the basically, he's a man of mystery, Stu, as I was saying yesterday to you, who we don't know too much about, rebel fighter. How interested are you in this series, Stu? It's on the streaming service, obviously.
Not at all, really.
You were really down on this, weren't you?
Star Wars, for me, has such an amazing universe of characters.
Sure.
And thousands of years of incredible history.
Sure.
And yet they are mining absolutely dry, like a 10-year period.
They love the, hey, what happened in that 5 minutes we don't know about?
Exactly.
Yeah, they love that kind of shit, don't they?
Yeah.
I know.
They want to fill in every single blank when we don't need that filled in.
It's like, remember when they went to Cloud City? Before they came to Cloud City?
Yeah. See, Rogue One was barely a premise. How they got the plans.
But I thought that was a very good movie.
It turned out to be a pretty good movie.
I enjoyed it.
But I mean,
that was an interesting story, though. I thought that was
cool. There were, but there were obvious problems with the story.
Sure. What?
Well, first off, the fact that you knew exactly how it started and ended means that everyone had to die. And everybody died. I
don't mind that much. Like, it was a suicide mission, man. Like, that's what it was. Like, and it's a story in a war, man. People die.
Yeah, and as a one-off, it did well. I'm happy with Rogue One. But I would so much rather see any other movie set any other place in the galaxy at any other time.
Well, this is like, it's a prequel to a prequel. And then we're going to get a prequel to a prequel to a prequel. And I'm like, fuck. Like, when do we stop? We're going to go back to the start of time. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I hear you.
Like, I'm ready for episode 9 to end this whole Skywalker obsession.
Sure.
So we can kind of move on to somewhere else in the Star Wars universe.
I'd love to see a Jedi that wasn't Luke Skywalker, like, doing Jedi shit.
Yeah, that were either hundreds of years after or hundreds of years before.
Like,
both of those times I'd find super interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you in a way.
Like, to see if, like, Luke's legacy lasted and there are still Jedis
in the future.
Hundreds of years in the future would be interesting. Or to go back and see, like, some of the first Jedis and learning...
I think they'll get there, though.
How that happened. That is interesting.
I get the feeling Disney, though, it's like they're sucking... like a parasite sucking on the whale or something. Like, they'll get there, man. They will get to that stuff. But they just... I think they're very much like, we must monetize every section of this franchise piece by piece by piece. Like, let's dissect the whole body. That's kind of what I feel like Bob Iger's looking at it as, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. One thing I will say is, like, I get the... Like, nothing against the actor, because I thought he was fine in Rogue One. It wasn't the most fascinating character in the world. It was a mystery. I said to you the other day, it was a man of mystery who was a rebellion leader.
That's the other thing. This guy is a lesser Han Solo.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy is a man of mystery who's not powered. He's not...
No.
...particularly special.
He wasn't particularly even interesting, I didn't think. Like, he was okay.
So he's a lesser Han Solo, and look how the Solo movie fared.
Well, yeah.
It was a story we didn't need telling about a man whose mystery was part of the appeal. Mm. Oh, we don't want to see every detail of his childhood.
He was saying something yesterday which I found interesting. I find The Mandalorian a lot more interesting than this story, because I think The Mandalorian could be more what you're after. It's out of the Outer Rim. I think it's out in the Outer Rim. It's going to be more Firefly-esque, basically.
Yeah.
Which I always think is fascinating. I know that show gets a lot of praise, but I also think it was not just a good show, it was also a great concept.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which I think people could explore. And, like, Disney have the money. Like, it's not Sci-Fi Network. Like, Disney have the money to do whatever they want to do with Star Wars. Like, they can fund these things properly. They can look good. I'm hopeful. Like, I mean, I'll watch this because I might enjoy it, because it's in that Rebels time period. There's a lot of stuff you can do, but you are held within fairly tight boundaries. That's probably where you're having a bit of a problem, Stu. Like, there's some big storytelling constraints on this kind of thing.
Yeah, it seems more than we need.
Yeah,
I often feel like they're trying to hold everyone's hand walking through these movies. Mm. Like, we can't have a random space opera again, like Star Wars was.
Sure.
Where everything is fresh and new and there's a bunch of unknown characters and we get to learn and explore.
Yeah.
Whereas they want to go, okay, well, remember this character? Well, they're linked here, so it's okay. We're in a realm that you already know. And it's kind of...
a checklist approach. Like, Solo had it. Like, let's do the Kessel Run. Let's do He Got the Falcon. Let's do this. Let's, like...
Exactly. It's like, tick, let's tick, do all tick, the tick. Things that you know and you want. Well, you think you want.
Yeah, think you want.
And people see it and go, well, I didn't actually want...
I didn't find the Kessel Run. I can barely remember what happened. Like, it wasn't particularly interesting. When I saw it.
Nothing in that movie was particularly...
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, like you say, people... This stuff sounds cool, but then it's like, okay, let's show you the exact game of Sabot where Han Solo won. And you see and you're like, wow, that was...
That was a card game.
That was just a card game. Like, it was exactly like what, you know...
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I hear your point. Like...
If they run a movie 100 years or 1,000 years before, and then you had someone say, I've got a new game... And it's Sabat.
Yeah.
That is a cool link that you can throw in there. It's a throwaway reference, But that's a cool link that people would appreciate.
Yeah.
Going, okay, this game's 1,000 years old, and that's how Solo got his ship, and...
Maybe they looked at Rogue One, though. It was a very well-received movie, and it did very well financially, you know, and maybe they thought this is kind of like... This was kind of like a tick. This was... No one really complained about Rogue One when it came out. Like, it was a hit. It did well with the critics. Maybe they're thinking, well, maybe it's worth exploiting that because it did well, rather than Last Jedi, which the more I think about it, the more I don't like it, you know?
Well, absolutely, yeah. They've gone with something that they feel is more palatable.
Mm.
People are still up on Rogue One. It's been the...
Well, I rewatched it recently.
Well, it's the most recently released Star Wars movie that got positive praise, like universally exactly. positive praise.
Exactly. Now, I have a final point to you. I know you're definitely talking more and more about 1 and 2 Knights of the Old Republic time. I feel...
Well, something similar, yeah.
Yeah, I feel they're going to do that, but that's very much the Game of Thrones showrunners who have got that...
Yeah, Dan and Dave.
Seriously, they think... they haven't announced it's going to be Legend of the Old Republic, but maybe that's why that hilarious caught it off, because they're going to do a whole series of movies based
on... Look, quite possibly.
I reckon that would rock.
I mean, that's their wheelhouse.
And also, Stu, like, there you've got fucking total freedom, because it's before everything.
Exactly.
You know, like...
Exactly.
What the fuck happened
back then? You can let these directors and let these, like, cinematographers and costumes and everybody can go whatever they think is best.
What happened? She's fought the Jedi and the Mandalorians. Is that what was going on back then? Is it Sith versus Mandalorians and Jedi, or what?
There was the Sith versus Mandalorian War, which is separate.
Okay.
Which I think has been an amazing film.
Right. But that's in that time period.
But Knights of the Old Republic was the Rise of the Sith.
Okay. And the Jedis were like, the Jedis in prequels, like they were everywhere, were they?
The Jedis were around, and then they kind of had this faction festering within the...
Okay.
The Jedi Council, which became the Sith Lords and...
Yeah. And so, that's like thousands of years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's not Palpatine or anything. It's like...
No.
So it's all new. No Yoda, or is there Yoda back then?
Knowing Disney, they probably try to get a young Yoda in there.
Sure, but basically everyone else is new.
But everyone's new. Everyone is brand new. There's no...
Sounds cool.
Like, the name Jedi will be continued.
Where do you know this from? Have you read books or comics or what have you done?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Also video games. You get... Bits I was going to say,
the video game Knights of the Old Republic, which is where I think a lot of people know it from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, because remember we did Knights of the Old Republic comic and it sucked. But, like, that was more the fault of the...
I don't know, I enjoyed it. I didn't think it sucked that badly.
All right, okay. Well, my criticism wasn't the story. I felt the comic itself was pretty lame, but...
Yeah, you were quite down on it.
Okay, no, but I am totally open to what you're saying, though. If there was a series of movies, which I think there will be, Stu... I think that sounds could be fun.
Well, for me, it's just you've got this universe filled with creatures and filled with culture.
Yeah.
And then you've got people that can control things with their mind.
Yeah.
That seemingly anyone can be.
Jedi.
Yeah. Some of them can turn evil and can control lightning.
Fuck yeah.
Like, you've got a pretty fucking cool universe.
You hear me? I'm like, fuck yeah. As soon as I hear about Force Lightning, hey, fucking George Lucas, question, why can't Darth Vader do Force Lightning? Answer me that, fucking Disney. Like, why? He's the best fucking Sith ever, and...
He's not the best Sith ever.
Oh, Darth Vader's up there.
No, he's not. That's...
Darth Vader's not up there?
Not really, no.
What do you mean? Like, in terms of, like, I thought his powers were off the chart.
No, he was a newbie Sith.
Okay, well, alright. Is that why he couldn't...
He was never the Sith Master. Like, put it that way, he was...
He's in his comic, I think. He's got some Padawans or whatever in his comic, I think.
Oh, God, that sounds terrible. No.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But
but no, Vader was a lightweight Sith.
Doesn't every...
He was powerful with the Force, but he was a lightweight Sith.
Okay. I don't really understand the difference. Like, I just thought, like, if you were a Sith, you could tap into more kind of the darker elements of the Force.
I feel like
the Emperor was pretty powerful.
The way they try to explain it is there's the totality of the Force, everything you can do with the Force.
Sure.
The Jedi restrict themselves to things that they deem good.
Like lifting shit up and, you know.
Yeah. Kind of stuff. So, like, the bare minimum that they...
Yeah. Bit of mind control.
Yeah, influence.
Yeah.
Whereas the Sith explore everything.
Sure.
And they kind of use hatred and strong feelings like that and love.
But that's what I thought. I
mean, to tap into it.
But Darth Vader did fall prey to that, didn't he?
Eventually. Yeah, he did. And he started using the whole range of his abilities.
Oh.
But there are other Sith that can bring people back from the dead, that can...
Fuck.
Like, they're way more powerful than Vader.
How is Count Dooku compared to Vader? I mean, they were fairly...
Anakin Skywalker was extremely powerful in the Force.
Right.
But he wasn't Vader for that long.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, you look at some of these Sith Lords that have been around for hundreds of years.
I hear your point. Okay. Right. Sort of like necromancers, almost. Like,
so think a lot of natural talent, but not a massive amount of training.
Got it. Okay.
He's good,
yeah,
but he's not best ever good.
Okay. And, okay, because his master was... He had two masters, really, didn't he? He had Obi-Wan and then he had the Emperor.
Yeah, which is normal. You don't start out as a Sith. You start out as a Jedi.
Turn
evil. That's
right.
How it always works.
Oh, okay. They don't get kind of groomed to be Sith from the beginning, some of them.
No. Oh, no. Okay. They let the Jedi find the people with potential, train them to a certain point, and then try and turn them.
Oh, dear me. It's like flipping a spot.
It's almost like you've never watched any Star Wars, Dave. How are you?
I know I have, but
how are you this naive in all of this?
Well, because I don't pay a lot of attention, and like, Dave. I also found the prequels deadly dull, so I probably missed some of the explanation. You know?
Oh, a lot of the explanation is now retconned out, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, but regardless, no, that is kind of what I thought, but I guess that when you explain it more like that, I'm kind of, because I assumed that what I basically assumed is when there were just heaps of Sith, that they just had their own training camps and would train their own people. But you're saying they still kind of siphoned off the Jedi.
The Sith has never been massive people.
So they're in the shadows, basically.
Yeah, always. It's always attempted to be a clandestine.
That makes more sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, regardless, I think that sounds interesting. And all that stuff you're saying about in the past, I do hope that they will do it in movies, I think. I think it's a golden opportunity, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Put it this way. It's like the MCU have kind of... They started out mining one area of time.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden they release Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's something set completely different.
Yeah.
Like, time and space and characters, everything's completely different. It was not connected in any way.
No.
And then all of a sudden you can bring the whole world together.
Yeah.
But it opens up so many possibilities.
I don't want to see, you know what I don't want to see, and I hope Star Wars never does? Like, I've always said this, I don't want time travel. Like, I don't want fucking, like, people from the future turning up in Knights of the Old Republic and stuff like that, or people from Knights of the Old Republic turning up, unless they've lived long enough. You know? I'd hate that in Star Wars, like if that happened. I could see that happening eventually with Disney going, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we could...
See, I could imagine them bringing back like a Force ghost.
No, I've got no problems
with
that.
From the past into the present kind of thing.
That would kind of be cool.
So someone that died 1,000 years ago comes back as a Force ghost, maybe.
Turns up as a really weak-looking Force ghost, you know, just kind of flickering. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Something.
You could do that, but I don't think there's any... precedent for time travel in the Star Wars universe.
No, I don't know about it. If there is, you know, there is. But now, Daredevil season 3, Stu, lost 57% of season 2 viewership in the first week. Was a stat released?
Yeah. I don't know where these stats come from.
Well, I see Netflix.
Well, no, Netflix is famous for not releasing.
Or sources inside Netflix leaking it. You know, must.
I don't know.
Or is it Disney kind of deliberately trying to get get them to dump it and the whole franchise back for their streaming service? It could be a bit of
politics. Oh, I doubt it, because that may have been in the first week, but the reviews have been universally positive.
Everyone loves it.
Everybody loves it.
I've not spoken to anyone who's watched it who hasn't loved it.
Yeah.
It's a love show, so.
Everyone's saying this is a return to form for the Netflix shows in Marvel.
Yeah.
And this is Daredevil at his best.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And it really is.
I'd completely agree.
So I imagine maybe the first week was down, sure, but... Word of mouth is so positive.
Word of mouth is extremely positive on this. Now, Stu,
it's got legs.
A show that I've been talking about, and we've spoken about, Watchmen TV show, Jeremy Irons is confirmed as Ozymandias.
Amazing.
Fantastic casting.
I love Jeremy Irons.
Yeah, I thought in the movie the guy did a good job, but Jeremy Irons, I reckon, could do that times five, you know?
Yeah.
He's an amazing actor, and he seems like the right personality, the right look. Like, it's not just like a good actor. There's a lot of things that he does that I could see Ozymandias him fitting very perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, it's great news. And I mean, Adam Crouch was saying he's disappointed that apparently it's not set in the 80s. It could potentially be set now. But I mean, when they announced it, they said it was going to be set in the, like, remember they were like, oh, this isn't an adaptation of the comic. This is like, and it's not a sequel, but it's a continuation. Remember that? It's not a sequel, it's a continuation. That fucking line.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, thank you, spin merchants.
Yeah, nobody saw through that clever play.
That was like Wonder Woman 2. Wonder Woman 2, oh no, it's not a sequel. Oh no, a sequel? Like, oh no, 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 no. Where'd you get that idea? Because it's the second in the series, I guess. That was where I got that idea. Stu, will you be watching Watchmen? That's my, with Jeremy Irons.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a must watch. I'm going to watch it. I'm definitely going to trial it. Like, fuck it, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Birds of Prey has now officially locked Ewan McGregor as Black Mask. It was announced. We were speaking last week.
Yeah, this is great. I want more Ewan McGregor in films.
Yeah, you just want more Ewan McGregor in general, don't you?
I think he's fantastic.
He's great. He's great.
But Black Mask is a cool character for him to get his teeth into.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Often underrated Batman villain.
Yeah, used very well in some runs. Yeah. Doesn't normally get the A-list spotlight. I think it's great that he's going to be a Birds of Prey villain. I think it's a fucking great move.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Catwoman confirmed for Birds of Prey? She's not, is she? I don't think so.
Never remember. They're constantly kind of...
If they're fucking chopping and changing. Huntress is, obviously. Harley is. I don't think Poison Ivy's been announced. Black Canary has been, and Batgirl Cassandra Cain's been confirmed.
Yeah.
So, and she's playing Orphan, too. Apparently, Cassandra Cain's going to be Orphan, not Batgirl, which is like her other persona, you know, at some point. Now, my Titans review continues, Stu. I've now watched 4 episodes. Pretty damn good show. And the Doom Patrol episode, which I'm just watching now, is the strongest so far. There's 5 episodes out now. One just dropped last night. Stu, I'm giving this like a 7.5 out of 10. Like, it's, and it's improving, too. Like, it's just a good show. It's not perfect, but it's certainly very watchable. And I tell you what, this Doom Patrol episode's excellent. Which is, and it's a huge advertisement for the series, which is coming like next year.
Yeah.
So I can only give that a fairly high recommendation.
Excellent.
The reshoots have started on Shazam, Stu. Some people are kicking up in arms like, oh, this means disaster. They're fairly normal for a fucking movie like this. You know, they're in the budget. Like, there's nothing. People are so keen to write disaster. I mean, I've said I think Shazam will flop. But the fact it's doing reshoots is there's nothing abnormal happening there.
Yeah.
You know, do you think they're shooting Cavill's cameo? Is it happening or not, Stu?
I wouldn't be putting money on it.
No. I'd bet against it at this point. Everything we're hearing from the Cavill camp seems like he's walked away. You know? Every indication.
Well, yeah, and why would he be settling for a cameo? Like, at this point, he's pushing for a solo film, which he should do.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a big enough name, and he's probably the biggest name that's been consistently good in DC. Superman should be up there.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Now, Stu, I just remembered something that I meant to ask you. Flashing back to the Mandalorian show, putting you on the spot here, are you prepared to do a captain's call on IG-88 turning up in the Mandalorian season 1? I'm saying yes.
I told you this yesterday. I said yes as well, you dumb damn. What are you trying to do?
I was just wondering.
You idiot.
I was hoping that like a day...
It's set like 2 years outside of when we've seen him live. It's... Of course he's going to be in it. It's stupid. What are you doing?
Well, okay. I was just wanted to see... Sometimes I try to lure you into these captain's calls because like, you know...
It's almost like you forget that I have a memory.
Now, Stu, what do you think of the Shrek franchise? Illumination has picked it up. Sounds like it's going to be a complete reboot. I think it's very unlikely the original cast will return for a Shrek reboot. Although the guy put out a very sort of PC fucking message where he says, oh, yeah, I'm really hoping to get all the original cast.
No, look, Shrek was great when it first came out. Yeah. Amazing film when it first came out.
20 years ago, I reckon. Wouldn't have been. Like, around 20 years ago.
Oh, must be close.
I was with my previous girlfriend. Like, it was a long time ago. I know that there were more movies. Like, I watched the first two. I haven't watched the last one, but it felt like
I was at 3 or so. Yeah. But, look, I mean, amazing franchise when it first came out, but it's gone now.
Yeah, I don't
like,
think...
Like, Shrek's come, Shrek. We had a great time, Shrek's over.
Yeah.
Let's move on. This is how movies work now, people.
But you know, Hollywood, are we going to reboot it? Like, fuck, really?
Yeah, they really need to not do that.
We're going to breathe some dead
like,
life.
Like, don't destroy something that people love. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, look at Ghostbusters. It came, we had a couple movies, we had a lot of fun.
Sure.
And then it was over.
Yeah.
And that's where it should have ended.
But they brought it back. And this is not a criticism on the women involved. I just felt the movie itself was poor.
No, the movie itself was terrible.
I actually went in with all best.
Badly reviewed by everyone. Like, universally, it wasn't liked.
No, I agree.
And it wasn't because of the fact that they had a female cast.
No, it wasn't.
It's because of the fact that this female cast had terrible scripts.
Boring movie.
None of them were particularly strong.
No.
The story was bad. The acting wasn't great. Like, it just had nothing going for it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this could be... Shrek coming back could be the equivalent of the Independence Day sequel, which I felt was, like, one of the most shameless cash grabs and just flopped.
Well, I mean, Illumination has run with this Minions thing for a while.
I love Minions.
That's their big money ticket.
Minions, yeah. It's a huge money ticket. Despicable Me Minions. Oh, fuck yeah. I love the Minions. I know you hate the Minions.
Oh, Stu. Minions are the
Stu's looking at me. I can see the judgment in his eyes. You know I love the Minions, man.
The Minions are the cancer of the movies. Just
what does it say about me? I like them. I find them funny. Like, give me a Minion movie. I'll watch it. Have a good time. Take your brain
out. There's been, like, 2 Minion movies. How?
Well, I want more. I mean, you know, I know there's been them. I enjoy them, though, dude. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're funny. I don't know if you've ever watched Despicable Me. These little guys are funny. And
Despicable Me was a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is about the level of Minion I can handle.
The problem with the Minions is they are a bit one-note.
Oh, a bit? Are you just realising this now?
But there's a lot of comedy mind amongst them.
No, there's not. It's mind.
Well, I've always
We've seen it. What they can do.
Yeah, it is perfect. Actually, I will agree. It is pretty well mined. Like, there is a lot more to go. But I don't know if you saw the Minions when they had Dracula and stuff, and they do Happy Birthday, and they open up the curtains, and he comes out of his coffin, and then he just crumbles. That's one of my favourite parts of the Minions movie. Okay, now, some good news, Stu, for me especially. Grant Morrison has inked a deal for Invisibles as a TV series. Now, he's just been inked. He had Happy on the Sci-Fi Network. Which you can pick up on Netflix and stuff, but The Invisibles, for me, that is one of my top shelf picks. And for this to be on TV, Stu, I mean, this would be awesome if this is done well. Obviously, we're a long way off, but I imagine that this is for him as a passion project, because this is considered one of Grant Morrison's best works, you know? It's one of his most iconic. We'll definitely do... We'll do Volume 1 on the show, Stu, because I'd love to see how you react to it.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think it's a very interesting comic, and people can have different reactions. It's not a comic that 100% of people are going to love, but it is very popular and it's good. Some Game of Thrones news, Stu. We know the final season's coming up. The finale battle is going to be the biggest ever seen on television. It's going to dwarf the Battle of the Bastards. There's going to be up to 12 intertwining stories revolving in the battle itself. So, like, shit's going on, man.
Well, it's going to be basically a three-way battle.
Wow.
Like, we know we're going to have three massive sides to this fight. We're going to have the White Walkers in one camp. We're going to have Cersei Lannister's armies in one side. And then we're going to have Jon Snow's kind of led as the third.
Fuck.
So it's going to be an all-out battle.
Who's going to wind up on the throne, do you think, Stu?
I don't think there will be a throne.
What, you think it'll just be desolation?
Yeah. No, I think the throne's going to get melted down and they're going to...
Well, everyone's going to embrace democracy or something. Or?
Basically, they're going to put them like a parliament or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, I reckon that's the way it's going to... I don't think there's going to be a king and queen. I think that's over.
Right. Wow. You're off the new world, Stuart.
But my bet is Daenerys and Jon Snow will end up together, despite being brother and sister. Or aunt and nephew. Aunt and nephew.
Hey, look, it's the Middle Ages. Like, they were allowed to do that back then.
Well, the Targaryens have historically loved...
I mean...
Love brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Love, a lot of love. I think you're probably right there. I mean, and frankly as well, like back in those days. What are they, cousins or something? Is that what they are?
Aunt and nephew.
Aunt and nephew. Mm, that is a little close. Who's the aunt? She's the aunt.
She's his auntie, yeah.
Really? Oh, well.
Because it was her older brother that's Jon Snow's real father.
Really?
Yeah.
Her older brother?
Yeah.
Really? The one that...
Rhaegar Targaryen, yeah.
The one that got killed
by... The one that was killed in the...
By Jason Momoa's character.
What? No, her older brother.
Okay, all right.
She's got two brothers.
Oh, okay, all right. So not him.
No, the one that was killed by Robert at the battle.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
You've got to watch the show or read the books.
I missed
no fucking clue what's going on.
I missed a couple of scenes. I was like, really? What, that guy? Like, that punk? But there was another guy you're talking about.
Yeah, who's referenced in every season. How do you not know?
Because I miss those seasons. And I hear referenced, and I'm always like, who is he? I don't know. And I don't ever go to Wikipedia like I mean to after the show.
He's never been in a season.
I know, he gets mentioned a lot, though, doesn't
he? Yeah, he died before the show started.
Oh, well, then fuck. Like, what am I supposed to do? Have a caramel? Am I supposed to... Like, for me, with that show, I enjoy it, but there, I must admit, there is a few things that go over my head. Like, a lot.
Dave.
And I keep meaning to read the books. I've only made it to chapter 2 of book 1. And I am enjoying it, but, you know...
Oh, that's good. Only 50 more chapters and 6 more books. So, we're getting there, Dave.
I liked it when he said the brother. I was like, the brother? I was like, wow, I didn't know that he had a whole other relationship. So, just...
No, not Viserys, Rhaegar.
To clarify... Her older brother.
Rhaegar Targaryen.
Rhaegar Targaryen. His name Rhaegar.
Yeah, the old one.
Rhaegar. Okay. So Rhaegar Targaryen.
Rhaegar, you Rhaegar. That's why the dragon is called Rhaegal.
Okay.
It's all named after her brother. Okay. You know what?
Rhaegar.
You've got no fucking
clue. Rhaegar Targaryen. Married who?
Lyanna Stark.
Okay.
So Ned Stark's sister.
Okay.
Right? The one who died... Which caused the whole war, which toppled the Targaryens.
Okay.
The two of them ran away together.
Ah.
But it was reported that he kidnapped her.
Oh, but really?
So Starks and Targaryens go to war, which is why Robert Baratheon became king.
Oh.
Massive all-out war, and then, destroyed and then everything.
What's his name killed him? Didn't Jaime Lannister kill him?
Jaime Lannister killed the king.
Yeah. Killed the king, I know.
Rhaegar's father was the king.
Oh.
Rhaegar was first in line.
Oh, I see.
Oh, Jesus, Dave.
Okay. Gee, well, thank you for clarifying.
Robert Baratheon killed Rhaegar in the Battle of the Trund.
Fair enough. Okay, well...
And that's why he became king. Because Jaime Lannister had just killed the king.
Right.
And the first in line had just got killed by Robert.
Oh.
And then Robert, because he led the army, took over the throne.
I see. Oh. And that was... And Robert is who? Robert's the father of Jaime and all that, is he?
Baratheon.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, Jesus. You really need to see season one.
Yeah, I have to watch it again. Because, like, who was the old guy king at the start of the show? There was an old king at the start of the show.
The guy... The fat guy with the big beard?
Yes.
That's Robert Baratheon.
Thank you. Okay. Oh, yes. And he dies.
Yeah, he gets killed.
Okay, right. And, okay, all right.
And, like, they say that his kids were the Baratheon kids, like Joffrey and Marcella and Tommen.
Right.
But we know that they're the bastard kids of Cersei and Jaime.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. And he, oh, no, right, but he was married to Cersei. Yeah.
He's married to Cersei.
No, that explains it all. No, so you've actually done a brilliant job, which no one has bothered to do for me when I try to kind of lob in. Because you've got to remember, I only came in about season 3 before. And
I mean, like, it's just a weak effort, Dave.
Yeah, well, but it's a weak effort, but regardless, I've clocked up a lot of episodes.
I like that you consistently let people down. No, but that's good.
But the thing is, for me, I just, those names get lobbed at me all show. And I'm just like, I just shake it off. Like, I'll get there one day. Well, Stu, you managed to explain it very well then. You should come around while we're watching the show, because I try to fire questions at Michelle, who's so sick of my questions on Game of Thrones.
I bet she is. Like, I've been dealing with it for 5 minutes and I'm sick of it.
Well, thank you. You've actually... We're supposed to be doing a shorter show, but this is actually... I'll be honest with you. This is one of the best things that I think you've done on the show for me personally. You've actually explained a lot of stuff about Game of Thrones that I've never understood. Like, I'm really bad with the names. I almost need a fucking chart to name...
You kind of need a couple of family trees going.
Yeah, I do.
That's what you need.
I do. And just... Also, I like to have someone give me the information rather than me having to look for it, because I can't be bothered. Like, and then I get on Wikipedia and I get lost, you know. Things go wrong. Now, more news from AMC. Breaking Bad series creator Vince Gilligan is reportedly working on a new 2-hour feature film with ties to the beloved series Breaking Bad, although it's currently unclear if it's a theatrical release. Now, this is another huge move from AMC, Stu. You've watched all of Breaking Bad, haven't you?
I love Breaking Bad.
Yeah, now I have started watching it on Netflix and loving it.
The further you get into that show, the more you will love it.
Yeah. And I love Better Call Saul. I mean, I love that show.
Yeah.
A comment at work, Melbourne Cup party the other day, one of the young guys, he made the call. He goes, Better Call Saul's a better show than Breaking Bad.
It's not.
I'm just saying someone made the call that wasn't me.
Yeah,
and I yelled out, I said, I love that show. And he goes, my man, at me. And it was like a moment of, like, you know, bonding went on.
Yeah, he's wrong.
But if a follow-up question had been asked of Dave, have you watched Breaking Bad? It would be, I've watched 2 episodes or 3 episodes of season 1.
Yeah, no. Better Call Saul is a good show.
It's a good show.
But it's nowhere near as good as Breaking Bad.
Now, would you... Now, spoilers. I believe he... From... Michelle watched it. I thought he died at the end of Breaking Bad. Is that right?
Who?
The lead guy.
Walt?
Yeah.
Spoilers, yes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, would this...
Well, I mean, you don't ever see him die.
I was going to say...
But he's left bleeding out from gunshot wounds...
Right.
...while the cops are raiding the lab, so...
Sure.
Like, he's going to get caught by the police if he doesn't die on the floor...
Sure.
...which seems pretty likely that he will.
Okay.
Plus, he still has terminal cancer.
Yeah, yeah. So... the whole concept of the show.
Exactly. Yeah. So, he's riddled with cancer and bullets.
And is he getting net worse through the show with the cancer? Like, is it ever referenced or... Because I've watched bits and pieces of what Michelle's watching and I don't remember too much of that happening. Or is it just kind of a time bomb in the background?
No, I mean, there's moments where, like, he's getting treatment, so it kind of goes up and down.
But... Right, okay. Do you think these movies, Stu, I mean, theatrical release feels like a stretch? Could again be the same thing as Walking Dead in the AMC theatres in the States?
No. No, because Breaking Bad... never had it down season.
Right.
It went up every season.
It's an acclaimed show.
And then when it ended well.
Sure.
Because they decided, we're going to end after five seasons.
Take their bow.
Now, there was a problem because they had a writer's strike that happened to fall in place after season one or two.
Okay.
So there was a massive gap in seasons.
Right.
And in that gap, it just got more popular.
Sure.
The fifth season, they kind of broke into two pieces.
Uh-huh.
Similar to like a Game of Thrones style.
Yeah, they did the part one.
Final ending's going to be
Walking Dead does that as well. Like, splits it up.
No. I mean, they said it's going to be five seasons, but then they released season five and six, which were both half the episodes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they told the story, the same amount of episodes as they said they were going to do.
Right.
And they weren't longer or anything, but they just released it a year later, which I guess was they get more budget, they get more people involved.
I've got to watch it all. I mean,
so
what I've watched so far, I've loved. Like, it's my cup of tea, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So the big difference is if they release something on as a movie now, it wouldn't be Walt. It'd be Jesse. It'd be...
Who's good as well.
Who's amazing.
Yeah, he's really good.
Aaron Paul was so good in that.
I thought Aaron Paul was a one-trick pony until I saw him on that show. And I was like, this guy can actually... He's actually got some fucking meat to his acting.
Oh, yeah.
So, for
me, if they released the movie, it would do very well.
Okay.
It's set in that universe.
Yeah.
Because it's still recent enough a TV show that people remember it.
Surely
very
it could
well.
Have flashbacks to Walt as well. I mean, I could see what's his name coming back to do some sort of a role.
You could. Bryan Cranston's still around. He's still looking good.
Very well respected, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for me, it's a show that was so well respected, so well reviewed, and it's still recent enough that all the actors are still there and looking similar.
Yeah.
Like, they've all aged a little bit, because it's been 10 years, maybe.
But if they do a sequel, then it makes sense that Aaron Paul's looking a little bit older, you know?
Yeah, but if they said... Yeah, exactly. If they said a sequel, Aaron Paul...
Okay.
...would probably take the lead.
All right, so you're buying a ticket if it comes out.
For sure.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, fair enough. And it has got incredible word of mouth. I would say a show's post-2000, it's up there in the top two or three, you know?
I mean, it's always considered with shows like The Wire... as the best TV ever.
I was going to say Wire. I reckon it beat Sopranos, which had the earlier.
I mean, the Sopranos is constantly up there.
Yeah.
But it is inside that.
But if you're in that box, it's a fucking incredible box to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about some of the best TV of all time.
Exactly. Where's Rockford Files sit there? Because it sits very high in mind.
Yeah, you're looking on the wrong list.
Cheesy detective
show. Yeah, try the other list.
Now, Stu, some more news came out about the Deadpool 2. The PG cut's going to be called Once Upon a Deadpool. We're based around Deadpool telling the story of his movie to a kidnapped Fred Savage. A portion of each ticket, $1, in fact, will go to a cancer charity. I am glued to the box office on this film, as I'm sure Disney and Marvel Studios will be as well. I'm fascinated to see what this movie will do in terms of numbers.
And just a hint for anyone listening, give $1 to charity and don't see the movie. Don't
actively campaign.
Don't tell Disney this is okay.
Wow.
Don't spend money to see a movie that you've already seen.
Yeah, I must admit, it is a shameless cash grab. Like, it's shameless. Like,
take that $1 that would go to charity and send it to a charity and then don't see the movie.
I gotta be honest.
Go and watch Deadpool 2 again on DVD or Blu-ray that you've got.
Yeah.
Or download, stream it,
yeah,
and then send $1 to the charity. Yeah, that is the best outcome.
Oh, yeah, all joking aside, like, I will say this, give to cancer charities. Like, that's the only, like, seriously, it is a cure.
That is, that is their big marketing play, though.
Of course it is.
Like, we're saying, oh, it's going to charity, a dollar. First of all, a dollar for a ticket, that's nothing.
Considering tickets are, like, in Australia, a ticket without any discounts, you're looking at, like, over $20 these days.
Yeah, it's normally around rip-off. It's normally around $20.
It's a fucking rip-off. Yeah, and that's not even plus-size seats or anything, guys. That's just fucking standard. You know?
And I mean, look, from that, Disney's probably getting around $7.
Sure.
Like in Australia, at least. Yeah. Seven Australian. And they're giving one to charity.
Did you hear me then? She said, take me back to the 1950s when comics were like 12 cents or whatever Chuck said they were. You know, like 7 cents and fucking movie tickets. I had a conversation with...
Yeah, the problem is your weekly wage is like $10. Okay. It's not...
I thought you were saying the problem is my views. My views are 1950s. I'd fit in well.
Oh, yeah, you would. Yeah. You'd thrive in that environment.
I was talking to Michelle's grandmother just the other day, and I love talking about the old movies and stuff, and I was chatting to her, and I said, how much was a ticket back in those days? Like a dollar? And she goes, oh, a bit more than that, young son. And I'm like, damn. Even back then, it was a rip-off then. She said, but back then, you paid whatever you paid, let's say $1.50. You got two movies. She goes, you got two movies back then, bang and bang, and like a matinee in the middle. And... Then they cancelled the two movies, made it one, because it wasn't popular. People were upset. Because it used to be you pay a dollar, go in, here's a movie, go out, grab a refreshment, come back in, and, you know, have a, like a slushy or something back in those days, I think it was. And like a frozen Coke, whatever they had.
Yeah, then, I'm sure they had frozen Coke.
Whatever,
yeah.
The fucking equivalent back then of a frozen Coke. Okay.
Water?
Like an ice cream. No, an ice cream or something. She said an ice cream.
A choc top, yeah. That's
okay, grab a choc top. And then back in for the second film.
Yeah, but remembering those films were like 60 to 90 minutes.
Gone with the Wind and stuff, that went fucking ever.
It felt like it did.
Canada's call right now. Gone with the Wind's over 2 hours. That's a tap around the internet.
No, it is.
Okay. Well, you're wrong then. I mean, so that's more than 90 minutes.
You're right, Dave. You've found a fatal flaw in my plan.
No, true. Stupid.
Most films were 60 to 90 minutes back then. So two films then is the equivalent of one film now.
Yeah. Like length of time was. A lot of movies back then were about 85 to 90 minutes. You're correct.
I mean, look at how many films these days are 2.5+.
And can I say, a lot of them don't need to be.
No.
So I hate being in the cinema and I'm like, oh my God, Jurassic Park 2 or Jurassic World 2, whatever it was called. Oh my God, how much longer could this movie possibly go? I was three quarters of the way through, I'm like, I am done. I'm not even slightly interested in what's going to happen. Like, they just let it go and go and go. And, like, I think by putting in more sort of effects and explosions, but there's no consequence. It just is so boring. The Transformers movies were so guilty of that, weren't they?
Kind of like your rants.
No.
They just go on and on. What I didn't like about
that was you let me rant to make that point. You let me fall into your trap, then I didn't enjoy it. Now
it's true though.
I want to say shout out to one of my friends at work, Ivor, who gave me this news item for the show. Blizzard had the most cringeworthy BlizzCon ever after their reveal of a Diablo mobile game at BlizzCon. It was Diablo Immortal. It was met, Stu. It's hilarious. You've got to watch the video. I'll actually put the video on the Signal and Doom Facebook page. It was met with silence and boos when they announced it was mobile by their most hardcore fans. One guy actually got up and said, is this an out-of-season April Fool's joke? And there was open booing at the presentation to the Blizzard reps that, who were there. Now, Stu, all these people wanted Diablo 4 on PC, and they got told it's a shitty mobile game. And they were riding in the streets. This, to me, is just not knowing your audience at all. This is like no surveying of the audience, no conception. These guys don't want mobile games.
For me, if you want to release a mobile game, you release it in tandem with the next massive release on the platform.
Sure.
As like a little game that they can play when they can't physically be sitting at their console.
Fallout
PC.
Did a very similar thing to that with the last Fallout game. They had some sort of bullshit mobile thing at the same time that Fallout 4.
Yeah, that the hardcore fans can play when they're forced not to play the original game.
Yeah, when they're on their fucking train and they can't, you know, do.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly what Fallout
people
4
are hooked. That's what they need to do.
Well, they fucked up, man. And
nobody wants to replace a really good console or PC game.
Yeah.
With a mobile game. Games aren't up there. They've never been up there.
It's like the... You know how what a Marvel fucking studios fans we are, and we love the games and everything, but they've got the mobile games of Marvel. You look at them and it's just like... And then also, what I hate is as well, they're huge pay-to-play things, the mobile games.
They're
all about pay-to-play. So, the game studios love them, but like as an experience, a gaming experience, they suck.
Yeah.
You know? And this leads me into my next
one. And I mean, honestly, the games, like, at the moment, massive platforms. Red Dead Redemption 2.
Fucking love it. I'm about to do a full review.
In 3 days.
Yeah.
Made more than $720 million.
Hell yeah. And GTA 5, their previous game, made a fucking fortune as well.
Yeah.
Rockstar, you know.
I mean, these things are outpacing massive cinematic releases. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
There's no movie that's made $750 million in 3 days. No movie has done that.
The Avengers movies and all that, no.
No movie's done that.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, you can see that these games are massively profitable.
Yeah. And doesn't that make you think that one day, dude, the movies will be on the consoles, just straight to console kind of thing, like straight to the streaming services, like we were mentioning in the last episode. You know, you'll get to a point where they're just pumping them out for the home audience, you know? I think, potentially.
Well, the problem is, as soon as you start trying to get quantity out, you lose quality.
Okay.
And, I mean, look, this Rockstar, when they released Red Dead, they spent years making this as good as it is.
They've been making Red Dead since the original Red Dead came out. It's been in development for years.
Yeah, and it normally takes these companies 10 or so years to properly make a game.
But their next game will be GTA 6, their next big game, and that will have been worked on, and we don't know anything about it. Like, it's all hush-hush.
No, but they tend to pace them out, so they've got two massive titles now.
For a decade.
Much.
Or 8 years.
Well, yeah, but they'll release one every, say, 4 years, and it kind of alternates. So you'll have maybe 8 years between games.
Are you going to pick up a console for Red Dead? It is very good.
No.
Wow. Okay. I always try to basically corrupt you, Stu.
I don't know. I'll happily take one of yours. You've got a spare, don't you?
Thanks, Stu.
You've got a spare. You've got two Xbox Ones.
Sorry, Stu. No, not just yet, man. Like,
you're ready to give a...
I like the way you're like, no, but I do have a suggestion.
Yeah.
Are you trying to use Jedi mind tricks there, Stu? Because I thought, for a second, I was almost like, you know, these aren't the droids you're looking for. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I'll just take this, Dave, and I'll be leaving now.
Exactly.
Take my copy of Red Dead while you're at it, Stu. Like, make sure you've got...
Oh, well, if you're offering, yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dave. Good mate.
Tommy Cavell asked me, he said, he actually says, Stu, he's a huge fan of yours, because you're both teachers, but he actually said, I don't care what Stu thinks on this, I need your Red Dead 2 review for the show. And I was like, well, I mean, Stu can fucking lump it. Like, he's going to get it. Like, anyway. Now, in terms of...
I like that you could have just hit reply and given him one.
No, he wanted it on the show. He wanted an official review. Short and sweet. He did. Short and sweet, I will say this.
It's not going to be short.
It's an epic game. You feel as if you're in the classic Western movies. Yes, the similarities to GTA are there, but it's a slower paced game. When shit starts popping off, you can clearly see this. There's heavy similarities to GTA in certain points. The landscaping and the amount of area you cover is massive. There is a fairly slow start, and it's very cinematic at the start, but that goes after about half an hour, and then you can pretty much do your own roaming. I'd say it's a great game. I'd give it like a 9 to 9.5 out of 10. In terms of, it's better than the first one in that it's got more stuff to do, but it's a very much a continuation. If you enjoyed the first one, you'll love the second. If you love GTA, just expect a slightly slower experience, but still a lot of fun. I'm in the very early stages. I've probably only done about 15 to 20% of the game, but I'm taking my time. I like to do the side missions. I mean, I'll sum the review up by saying it's a must buy if you've got a console and you're even slightly interested in this kind of stuff. One tip I will say is don't bother robbing everyone along the trails. It's simply not worth it from a monetary perspective. If you do, wear the bandana because it doesn't. Then the cops don't know you did it. But I did a lot of killing, Stu. I was pretty much like a serial killer. I was just flat out just like, if I saw a fucking horse with someone on it, I would just like peg them in the head and steal their stuff. And you take a reputation, which I think is bullshit, Stu. What do you think about this? If I'm in the Wild West, okay, and I come across a guy on a horse and I shoot him in the head and he dies, and I steal his stuff and ride off, and no cop, no witness, nothing. Why should I take a reputational hit on my status? You know? Like, it's got a status.
Because you're walking around with the dead guy's stuff?
But they don't know that. I've just taken the coins from his fucking pockets and put them in my pockets. Like, that's it. Like, I'm not... No one knows I've done it. It's not a victimless crime, because there is a victim. But no one knows I've done it. And so why should you take a reputational hit on that? That's the question I'd have for Rockstar. You got away with the perfect crime, so you shouldn't be copying anymore. But it's just to dissuade people from doing what I was doing, which was the serial killer approach. And then I paid all my bounties, and now I'm being a good boy. Because it's not worth it, because bounty hunters pop off at you, Stu, like, and they're fucking, they come out from the woods, like six or seven of them. And it just causes a whole lot of headaches. But that wraps up my review. I mean, it's a must buy. I really recommend people hop on board it. It's a great game. Now, Stu, we've got this. Marvel Comics announced, you remember Old Man Logan?
I do remember Old Man Logan.
Are you ready for Old Man Quill, Stu? That got announced by C.B. Sobolski the other day. Who the fuck cares? Would you agree?
Pass.
Yeah,
thanks.
Huge pass.
Thank you anyway, but I'm happy with Old Man Logan, and that's it.
Yeah, I've never... Yeah, I didn't even...
And like, I mean the original Old Man Logan, not the continuing series of Old Man Logan. Yeah.
Not the, let's bring him back! Remember Old Man Logan? He's back! Yeah, no, that sucked.
Yeah,
and
no, thank you.
Old Man Quill is even worse. What would be the
lowest? Is it an ongoing series or is it a limited?
I don't know. I mean, they just announced it with a big fucking...
Like, if it's a small event, maybe it'll be good. I don't know. But as an ongoing series, I don't care.
No, I don't care at all. Like,
if they're going to release five issues and it's going to tell its own self-contained story,
sure,
could be good. I'd give that a go.
Well, they were also talking about doing Old Man Frank. They had Old Man Frank in
that sounds awful.
Well, they had him in the Wolverine Old Man Logan annual. To me, it's all a bit boring. Like... Now, quick question to you, Stu, that I just wanted to wrap your head around here. We had a discussion recently about characterization. Remember I was talking about the characterization of Nightwing and Batman and how I didn't feel Tom King got the characterization at all right. Now, where are you, Stu, on... Is it an issue for you when there's characterization of characters across decades, they change, but also different creative fronts? So let's say... To pick a name out of a hat, let's say Tom King stops writing Batman Tomorrow and Catwoman. And the next issue, like, Brian Michael Bendis is writing Batman. And he's, in one heartbeat, the characterization of those two and their relationship just changes instantly with a new writer. Is that an issue for you? And I compare that to, say, an Image title that has pretty much always the same creative team on it for the duration.
Well, I mean, when it changes instantly...
Yeah.
That's poor storytelling. If it changes, that's good.
Yeah. A lot of evolves and stuff.
Yeah, we've got to have characters evolve. They've got to change with the times.
Sure.
Because they've got to remain somewhat current to the viewers.
Yeah, like Spider-Man, for example.
Good example. The readers have got to be able to connect with these characters.
Yeah.
I mean, if they stayed how Batman was in the 40s...
Sure.
Incredibly unpopular.
I will become a bat. He sees a bat. I will become a bat. And he's just like, fuck it, I'm a bat. You know?
And, you know, he kind of walks in with a magnifying glass to solve a crime and then leaves.
That would be funny.
Gets back in his street
car. They should
car.
Bring back him for, like, an issue, like, old school, like, you're Batman.
Like, it'd do well as a one-off, but but that would not sell an ongoing.
He's like, listen, chum, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you go back to the super cheesy kind of comics. So it needs to change and evolve.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think if you can be smart about it and make an event that forces change... So go back to
Axis, for example, did that in Marvel. They flipped everyone around.
Well, yes, I'm thinking more like what Chuck Dixon did with breaking Batman's back.
Oh yeah,
like all of a sudden he went from this unstoppable force of Batman to being seen as absolutely vulnerable.
Yeah, he was very weak.
Like, he had a weakness and it was exploited badly.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you kind of knew as a reader that Batman wasn't unbeatable.
Yeah.
So that forced a lot of changes in relationships between him and Supes and him and Catwoman. And so everything did alter from that point onwards.
Good point.
Even if it was only slight.
Oh, there was a lot of changes in the
Batman family. But there was an event that sold comics that then led to everybody changing slightly.
Yep.
That's the kind of evolution that you need in every character.
Hmm.
When a new writer comes on, you kind of have to write the characters as they were previously.
But so often they don't. Like, I know when Ed Brubaker's Catwoman run ends, and I flick to the next issue of Catwoman, and I was like, oh, dear. And it was like, bah, bah, you know, it was over.
See, if they'd run with that same style of character for a few issues, and then something happens.
Yeah.
Death in the family, wedding, child, you know, something big-ish.
Yeah.
You then kind of can evolve that character into something that you wanted to explore.
Mm.
And that works a lot better. Whether that is a change for good or bad, we don't know.
Sure.
There's plenty of people that have tried change and it hasn't worked. And then the next writer's come on and they've changed it back. And
definitely. I mean, but that's normal. That's good. Spider-Man's a great example. Spider-Man's filled with, like, let's start again, you know, back to basics kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a kind of... There is a restore to factory default settings a lot of the time.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you look at... the original Peter Parker was... kind of, he was definitely sad at Uncle Ben's death.
Sure.
But it was kind of a motivating sadness.
Hmm.
Whereas then you had the death of Gwen Stacy, and that was depressing. That was sad.
Like, yeah.
Where he didn't get that way with Uncle Ben.
No, well, Uncle Ben's kind of right at the beginning, isn't he? And he's kind of a bit more sort of...
Well, Uncle Ben's the catalyst that turns him from Peter Parker into Spider-Man.
Yeah, for those spoiler kids.
Like,
if you...
Whereas Gwen Stacy was the catalyst that made him go from Spider-Man to a Spider-Man that deeply cares about everyone he meets.
I've got a question for you, though. In the 70s comics, when that happened... Like, I know from Spider-Man Blue, his reaction. In the 70s comics, do you reckon he spent a long time in the comics themselves grieving her after the event?
Or not immediately, like, no. I mean, there was certainly grieving.
As a story event, I wonder how long it was before he kind of shrugged it off, you know? I don't know. I haven't read them.
I mean, it kind of gets referenced pretty heavily for the next few episodes.
Well, that's how it should.
He has to shake it off, but he's kind of putting his game face on.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
Like, this person's attacking the city, gotta focus.
And it would suit Peter Parker's internal monologue to at least reference it. Like, I could picture that. Like, yeah. I read a lot of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. One thing Marvel Encyclopedia Drew Dracy was going to say... was basically that he wants us to do the original Clone Saga, basically. He, in fact, wants to do Drew's Views, Stu. Well, basically, I think it's Jerry Conway wrote it. And, you know, obviously the Clone Saga of the 90s. Well, that was a continuation of a storyline that was done in the early 70s or late 60s. And the original Clone Saga is considered a bit of a classic. Like, so I thought that would be a good one to pick out from the vault, Stu.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a great run.
Have you read it?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, cool. Let's see, I haven't. So, I mean, fantastic. I think that would be something that would be well worth a listen. Now, I'm trying to find...
Yeah, for sure.
Michael Kellershim wrote me an all-time classic. Sometimes Michael just kind of blows it away in terms of his emails. And he wrote me an email. I'm just trying to find it on my phone, Stu. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk to the audience for 2 seconds and kind of give them some of your thoughts.
What about how incompetent you are with technology?
I've already found it, so I'm not that incompetent. Okay, so this is an email from Michael Kellershim that came in last night after I had a few drinks, and I read it, and I was like, man, he's making some heavy points. And, like, I mean, almost like Mike Tyson level, kind of like knockout punches, like in terms of, like, the penetrating nature, and I thought he was making. So, Lois, greetings and glorious peace be upon you. Just saw this article which claims in the major superhero movies, heroes are more violent than bad guys. The figures cited seem pretty weak. I don't see how the heroes had a higher body count than villains, but it does bring up something I've noticed, which brings me to a very special rant. Marvel heroes are actually villains now. This is Michael talking. In the modern Marvel era, which starts with Bendis arriving in Avengers in 2004, the good guys spend more time fighting each other than the villains. A quick look at the major Marvel events shows the consistent theme. A list of events with the main villain. Disassembled / House of M, Scarlet Witch, which is 2004-5. Civil War, Avengers vs. Avengers, 2006. Planet / World War Hulk betrayed by his friends, 2007. X-Men Schism, Wolverine vs. Cyclops, 2011. X-Men vs. Avengers, Enough Said, 2012. Original Sin, the heroes discover they've been betrayed to and lied to by their fellow heroes for years, 2014. Axis, one of my favourites. Heroes become villains, bad guys turn good. Secret Wars, Avengers, brackets, Illuminati, kill other planet heroes during incursions, 2015. Civil War 2, Avengers fight each other, again, 2016. Inhumans versus X-Men, Enough Said, 2016. Secret Empire, Captain America turns into a Nazi, 2017. With the exceptions of Age of Ultron and Dark Reign / Siege stories, the so-called good guys spent most of the last 14 years waging war against one another. Comics always had the when heroes meet and slug it out stories, but these were always resolved by the end of the issue, in time for the heroes to join together and beat the actual bad guy, which we've seen many times in comics. My theory is that Marvel writers have reflected their own personalities into their work. That is how they live their lives. Any disagreement between friends becomes a line in the sand. Differ from me and I shall shun thee. It seems the camaraderie has died in comics. The concept of the hero has become damaged in a society where people treat the police as killers, soldiers and murderers, and elected leaders as fascists. It seems this dark, nihilistic, cynical mind, all things I have, set remains the order of the day over at Marvel. Maybe Joe Quesada can blame everything on Bendis, like Geoff Johns blamed Dr. Manhattan for their mistakes. Boom! Michael. Wow. I mean, imagine reading that after a few drinks. I was like, wow, Michael is coming in from the fucking sidelines and he's just throwing some big blows. A few connects. What did you think, Stu?
Most of what he's saying is right.
Is he saying the problem is us? We are the problem?
No, I mean, I think that these writers, they do have political kind of...
leanings.
I'm just saying that these writers, there is a lot of politics that goes on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah, of course there is, yeah.
But the other thing is, with Marvel, it makes sense when heroes fight other heroes.
Yeah.
That's more compelling.
Yeah.
For one, when there's a hero versus a villain in a comic book...
Yeah.
Guess who's going to win that fight?
Well, mostly the hero.
It'll be a great fight.
Mostly the hero.
It'll be a great fight, but the heroes will win.
In general, the hero.
Ultimately, the heroes will win.
Yeah.
There are so few stories where the villains can win, because it means you're killing off a hero.
Although, I will say this. I used to have a t-shirt that came out around the time of the first Civil War comic, okay? Well, I think it was the first Civil War comic, and it had like Iron Man holding up Captain America's shield and Captain America kind of clumped underneath him. So, i.e. Iron Man had beaten Captain America and was raising the shield. It was kind of a hero pose. And I remember a roommate at the time that I had, she looked at it, didn't read comics, just knew some of the IPs, you know.
Yeah.
She said, I don't like it now. The heroes are all fighting each other. And she just walked off. And like, but that was the sell when they first started fighting. Like, they're really fighting each other now, not just in one issue. It's really on now between, say, Captain America and Iron Man, who tussled over the years, but now it was like, now it's real fight in Civil War.
Well, the other thing is, when you've got a real hero versus hero fight, and someone's going to lose, like, that's a bigger deal, because you know you're losing a hero.
Are they doing it too much, is my question. When I read that list, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but are they doing it too much?
What would you have them do in place?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've got to fight someone. So it's... if they're not fighting themselves, like with these internal battles, like Captain America becomes a Nazi, it's back to fighting externally. But I think as a society, we are probably so without unity and we are so divisive now that it's inevitable that they're fighting each other. I think it is a reflection of our society. We find it hard to agree on much for too long, and that's just the nature of humans, and that's influencing the writing. That's what I would say. And I also think it's a brand thing, like Hulk fighting Iron Man or whatever has still got a ting of, it's got like a bounce to it, you know, it's got a pop to it. So I think that's the reason it's happening. The alternative is you go back to fighting terrorists, aliens, Nazis, etc. That's kind of...
which for me has been done.
Of course it's been done, yeah, of course it has, yeah.
So I mean, I don't need to see Captain America or Iron Man fight terrorist cells. I think that's...
well, they've done it, and they will again.
They have, but it's a story that doesn't tell us much.
It rarely
goes anywhere.
Captain America fighting terrorist cells would be, a fascinating story in today's world. I think you could do a full-on... I think you could do full-on, like... I'm surprised they haven't done that. Like, proper Captain America in Iraq or Afghanistan. Like, fighting Taliban, fighting ISIS.
Well, no, because they don't want to polarize Captain America.
Yeah, maybe.
Frank Castle works. Frank Castle has always been...
Sure.
Very pro-military, whereas Captain America is not necessarily pro-military the whole way through.
Sure, definitely. There's times in his life where he has been.
Yeah, and then there's times where he's completely against it.
Definitely.
The idea being that he's everybody's captain.
Yeah, I know.
And so he's meant to be that character that unites every faction of America.
Sure, but that is a fantasy. That is a fantasy. Like... you know, well,
it's a made-up character.
Yeah, I know.
Like, they can achieve it with a made-up character. Not a problem.
But I'm still surprised they haven't at least done a mini-series of that, because I think it would be interesting. But I think it's probably politically a bit too hot as well.
Well, possibly.
I don't know. Like, yeah, but I think Michael makes a good point. I do think, though, that like some of those events worked well. Like, I always think Axis was a really good event. I always thought Axis where everyone got flipped. Like, I forget what happened, but some magic spell happened and everyone got flipped. If you remember, Deadpool became like Zenpool. He was really sane and calm.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really well-told story. I don't think it was that well-received by the public. I personally enjoyed it. Like, I love Avengers vs. X-Men. It's one of my favourites, you know? I think it can really work. Civil War 2, though, it starts me to think, like, they're just repeating. Like, Civil War 2 was not Civil War 1. Civil War 1, it felt like the stakes were real. Civil War 2 felt like a shameless, like, let's just retread the same exact ground.
But remembering that in a lot of these events, yes, you've got fights in heroes versus heroes.
Sure.
But the overall villain was not a hero. Like, these scenarios were set up by someone who is villainous.
Sure. Not all of them, though. Like, Civil War, the original Civil War, was a genuine fight over Superhero Registration Act at its core.
Yeah, like, that's a legitimate point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway, yeah, no, good point, Stu. Like, no, I just think it's...
But you look at something like Secret Wars, which was heroes versus heroes, but it was set in motion by villains, by the outsider, by...
Mm.
Like, that wasn't...
No, that was more kind of like a disaster movie. You know, like...
You still got hero versus heroes fights, but...
Yeah.
A very different enemy.
Exactly. And, like, realities crashing into each other.
And the same when you had Avengers versus X-Men. While it's a clear-cut hero versus hero, the villain of the piece, if you can call it that, was the Phoenix Force.
Exactly. That was what was causing it.
Which kind of came and possessed a bunch of them, and they were trying to stop it.
There was a large element of personal rivalries in that, and points of view in that clash. Like, within that, there was genuine hero versus hero fights.
Yeah, but I think this is also a case of... The heroes have been far more better defined as characters than the villains.
True.
They get a lot more time. You get a lot more internal monologue with heroes.
Yep.
So they're much better defined characters. So it's easier to have political leanings either side and have these characters fight and disagree.
Yeah, the villains seem to, if they ever become anti-heroes, they seem to slide back to villains again. They, you know, like Sandman, for example, at times he's been almost an anti-hero. Same with Baron Zemo in Thunderbolts. And then they slowly slide back to just being flat-out villains again. Like, they struggle to keep that anti-hero status. You know Sandman, you know how at times he's kind of helped. But then you read another, you pick up a Spider-Man comic and he's just a villain?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, we're just back to that again. Interesting. Look, we don't have the answer. I mean, you made a good point, Michael.
By their very nature, villains can't... You can't empathise with villains. That's the point.
Hmm.
Like, you should understand what they're doing, but you shouldn't understand why they want to do it so badly.
Mm. Should come off as, you're saying, a little deranged a lot. A lot of time that's how it comes off, a little...
Not deranged. They shouldn't seem crazy.
Yeah.
Like, but you shouldn't empathise with the villains.
Well, what about the Darth Vader comic? Because that is from his point of view. That's an interesting example to me. He's evil, he's doing bad things, but you do sympathise with him in the comic. Like, it's written that way. Like, I'm just as an example.
I mean, people argued that Thanos was the same way.
Yeah.
That you kind of understood
why
he was
doing
that. He was trying to kill off half the people to save the other half.
But I think at some level, you don't have to agree, but it is interesting. It doesn't always happen. It certainly doesn't always happen. It is interesting where you can get a villain where there is some sympathy or level of empathy with them, even if you don't agree with them. I do find that interesting. It's rare, though, especially in comic book movies.
Exactly. It's hard. Yeah. It's very hard to walk that tightrope.
Like, take the Emperor and Return of the Jedi. You don't empathise with him at all. He's flat out.
No, but a lot of people found that in Infinity War, they were...
Yeah.
Kind of going, well, yeah, I understand why Thanos is doing it. He's wrong. I don't agree with him, but I understand.
And there's even some people...
And that's the goal. That is the ultimate goal. But it's very hard to walk that tightrope.
True. Like, I mean, think of Die Hard, the original villain in that. Like, you don't in any way... You understand in a weird way what he's doing, but you don't sympathise at all. He's just flat-out evil, even though he's quite charming and stuff. Do you remember? Like Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Like... And then his brother in Die Hard 3, at the end of the day, he's not doing it out of revenge. He's doing it to steal as well. Like, you can have a charming villain and yet still disagree with them. They still are fundamentally evil. I don't know. It's just, we all know, that's a good point. I do wish, I love it when you have a well-developed villain. But often the comic books don't almost allow it, which I guess points to why you're saying. But like when you have Cap versus Iron Man, these are two people... that you know very well, and both of them have huge segments of the fan population that buy them and support them, so you have this embedded war, even amongst the fans, something they can talk about in stores and stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, now Weekly Comics. Bit of a shorter show this week, guys, because Dave has an appointment. First one up, Green Lantern 1, the much-anticipated Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp collaboration. Look, I like Green Lantern. This was a strong first issue. Obviously, it was all set up. This has been highly anticipated, Grant Morrison coming to Green Lantern. Jim said 24 hours in, they'd already sold out. Well, or gone very close to it, you know?
Yeah, and this is exactly what I want from my Green Lantern. This is out there. This is Morrison at his best.
Dude, this, he's going to get
it's crazy visions. It's aliens. It's the artwork was stunning. I really enjoyed the artwork.
Liam Sharp really kind of brings it. He was great on Wonder Woman. He's a 2000 AD guy originally. Great guy.
yeah,
I think this has got so much legs. Like Grant Morrison,
this has a lot of potential. Yeah. This can go in a really cool place.
And we know with Grant Morrison, he's going to take you there.
Yeah.
Did you know he said, "Oh, what we're doing is a police procedural. We want to kind of focus on that." And then the third issue, guess what it is? It's him talking to, like, it looks like God, Green Lantern talking to God. Everyone on the Grant Morrison board was going, "Yeah, it's a downbeat police procedural." Here's the cover of issue 3.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking so forward to this. And this is set up. Like, don't expect to buy this issue and thinking you're going to get the whole thing. This is set up. But we are going to definitely be following this one up. Now, Stu, I brought in a new title, Border Town. It's a new Vertigo title that came out of the new line. It's all to do with, like, their Mexican and Mexican folklore. It's set in L.A. What did you think of this one? I gave it 7 out of 10. I thought it was very interesting in the first two issues.
Interesting title. Interesting take on it with kind of those Mexican monster things.
Yeah, yeah.
Felt really cool. Very different.
Very different.
But really enjoyable.
He was on John Suntress, the guy who's created it, and he was very interesting. And you know sometimes when someone sells you, not just on the concept, but also on them a bit. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go and check this out. And I've actually also got to, if you're interested, I've got issue 3 because it just came out last week. And I got my DC review copy, so I'll happily give you a copy of that to continue, because it's a strong series. I'll actually give a recommend to listen to John Suntra's Word Balloon interview with this guy, but also pick up Border Town. It is a very, very interesting storyline, and I think very much what he wanted to do was Eric Esquivel, and I spell that Eric E-S-Q-U-I-V-L, is how you spell the surname. Esquivel is what I'm coming out with. I don't know about you, Stu, but that's what I'm coming out with. On my attempt. Now, I have been wrong before with pronunciation, but I think do him a favour and pick up an issue of Border Town and see what you think, because they made a big deal, DC, when they were relaunching Vertigo, and I think this is a step in the right direction. Now, our final weekly comic this week, shout out to Neil Matthews. Neil Matthews, big fan of the show, big Punisher fan, big Judge Dredd fan, and big fan of you too, Stu. He put out there to watch Marvel Knights or read Marvel Knights 20th issue 1 with Donny Cates, who's done some fantastic work on Ghost Rider, Thanos, all sorts of stuff recently in Marvel. Now, this was such an interesting concept, Stu. Daredevil basically wakes up and everyone's forgotten who they are, basically.
I absolutely loved this.
Yeah, you did? Oh, good.
This is a fantastic read.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought it was... I would actually say to people, go and pick this up. It's by the way, the 20th anniversary of Marvel Knights, Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada launching Marvel Knights, which was a huge turning point for Marvel, creatively and financially. They created it when Marvel were almost bankrupt, and they were basically given a license to do whatever they wanted, and they created a stack of good titles. And this is the 20th anniversary. Yeah, so you enjoyed it, Stu. I mean, I'm giving an 8 out of 10. I thought this was very good.
Yeah, so am I. I really enjoyed this. Really cool concept.
Mm.
You're left guessing at every turn what's real, who's sane and who isn't. Are they in on it? Are they not?
How about Bullseye when he goes, "Will you tell me who I am then, boss?" And he pulls up his cap and he's got the Bullseye. I was like, this is fucking wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the kind of reveal at the end of the villains.
The big man.
I loved it.
And can I just say, without spoiling, one of my favourite villains. Whenever I see him.
I mean, a combination. There are multiple villains.
Yeah, there are multiple, yeah.
And they're all some of my favourites.
Yeah, it's good.
I know who you're talking about, and absolutely one of my favourites as well.
And Kingpin's in this too, and he's great. And especially
he's another one of my favourite. Like,
Kingpin
you've got
on TV right now, and then Kingpin in the comics, and I'm just like, man, yeah. This is back to Kingpin being awesome, you know?
Yeah. No, this is a really good comic.
Yeah.
This had great heroes, great villains. It's a really interesting story.
Let me ask you a question. Marvel Knights 20th issue one versus what you've read so far of Heroes in Crisis. What do you prefer? You know, the two fairly big titles coming out against each other.
At the moment, for me, it's Marvel Knights.
Yeah, I thought it probably would be, yeah. I think this is probably... This one stuck under the radar. I didn't hear a lot of publicity. When I saw this in the reading list coming out for the week, I thought it was just they were doing a re-release of something Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada did back in the day. But Neil Matthews reached out and he said, oh, Frank's in it. And I went, yeah, Frank's in Marvel Knights issue one by Chuck Dixon. And it was like, oh, no, it's the... Well, now. And I'm like, oh, I've got to check it out. And then I was like, well, it's actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm hoping that this for me feels like Marvel's turned a corner and they're on the way back up.
Hope so.
And it feels almost like DC's done the opposite. Mm. Because for the last couple of years, DC has easily outweighed Marvel.
Since Rebirth, DC have definitely had the ascendancy.
They've absolutely been better than Marvel.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're now back on a level playing field.
Well, that's good. That's
Marvel's
good
putting out a couple of great titles, and DC's events have felt a little flat recently.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm enjoying Heroes in Crisis, you know that, but I'm enjoying
it. It's enjoyable.
It. Yeah, but I'm enjoying it, but it's also like...
I'm not raving and recommending.
No. As a story, I prefer this.
I would be recommending Marvel Knights.
Yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily be recommending Heroes in Crisis.
Fair enough. Interesting one from Tom King. I was talking to Adam Crouch. Mr. Miracle's wrapping this week. I was thinking that's one we could do for the show, Stu. It's very out there. That's one thing I will say. It's good, but it's super out there. Like, for this one, you're going to have to take the Dave pill and just go on a trip through that crazy mind.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of Miracle.
Never been a fan of what?
Mr. Miracle.
Neither have I, but what Tom King's doing on it is it's full on weird. Like, I've read about.
You're not selling me on this, Dave.
Well,
if you haven't liked it before, don't worry. Now it's just weird.
Well, dude, Mr. Miracle, the escape artist. Do you think I like him? No, I think he's a fucking zero normally. But like, it's all about dark side and like alternate realities and like fucking what's real, what's not. That's kind of my cup of tea. You know, it's a strong cup, Stu. Spicy.
We'll certainly give it a try.
Okay. But it was just, I was just letting people know that apparently, I think it's wrapping this week. Adam was saying he's been reading along. Now, Stu, your choice was this week, Trade of the Week, Flashpoint. You don't mess around, do you, man? Like, when you bring it to the table, you know, kind of, I've been a bit experimental. Like, yeah, I had a string of fucking ones that just didn't chart, and then I came bouncing back. But good thanks to Ed Brubaker, and just going back to my main supplier. But you brought up Flashpoint. I haven't read this since it was out in singles.
Right. See, I read it maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm.
So this is my first reread of it.
To give listeners the basic pitch of Flashpoint, Geoff Johns writing. Who's on Ask You? Can you check out who's on? I forget. I think it might be Adam Kubert or Andy Kubert. It's one of the Kuberts. Basically,
Andy Kubert.
Andy Kubert, yeah, and it's very nice art, as you would expect from the Kuberts.
Gorgeous art,
yeah, it's gorgeous art. And Geoff Johns on writing duties, who is a big Flash guy and had a long Flash run. Basically, the concept is that Flash, not Wally West, Barry Allen, wakes up and he's in a world where he doesn't have the Flash powers, and his mother's alive, and just basically a whole lot of shit's different. In terms of heroes, like Wonder Woman's fighting Aquaman in a world war.
Yeah, the kind of the America's been split up into factions, and you've got the Atlantans on one side versus the Amazonians on the other,
who are tearing up London, aren't they?
Yeah,
that's
the current battlefront,
and just heaps of like Captain Cold is the hero of the city.
Yeah, it's all very different.
It's all very different, but Barry has the memories from the previous, like, universe, the normal universe, and he's like, where's Batman? And then he goes to meet Batman, and Batman's Thomas Wayne, not Bruce.
Which was a brilliant twist at the time.
Oh, it's a fantastic twist.
I love that.
Bruce Wayne got shot and killed in the alley, and Thomas survived, as did Martha.
Yeah, so Thomas and Martha survive. Their son got killed in front of them.
And you don't find out in this storyline, but in the Azzarello Batmans, you find out that Martha became the Joker.
Mm.
The Azzarello stuff, because basically this is the concept of the story. Like, Flash is trying to piece everything back together. Because in this one, the heroes are fucking useless. Unfortunately, it's also the rise of Cyborg as a main character. And this is where...
Yeah, but I didn't mind Cyborg in this story.
Yeah, well, get ready for Cyborg then to be relaunched in the fucking New 52. It was like, oh, now he's a big guy. He's one of the big boys. This was when DC drew the line in the sand on that with Cyborg. He is good in this storyline, I agree. Yeah. The Shazam family are interesting as well.
Yeah, they are.
You see, because they're also Geoff Johns' favourite. And I think he had big plans to try to launch them a lot bigger in New 52, which just didn't pan out. But they are interesting in this. Like the whole lot of them in this form Captain Thunder. So it's kind of like a Voltron kind of thing, isn't it, Stu? They all sort of join together to become him. And he's got massive scars on his face from what Wonder Woman's done to him in the last fight.
Yeah, which is very cool.
That was pretty cool. I mean, I'm going to hand the reins over to you, Stu, to give me your thoughts. I mean, for me, this was just a really enjoyable read. It's not a slow read. It's a fast read. It's a good pace.
No, it's fast-paced. It's quick. Yeah. It's very easy to pick up and read.
Yeah.
Anything that's set in an alternate dimension from day one, I've always found is a great pick-up point for a lot of people.
I'd almost give this to a young cousin or something who is interested in... Who liked The Flash or something.
If you're interested in comics in general, I think this is a great starting point.
Yeah.
Because it gives you big characters that you're kind of aware of. Wonder Woman, Aquaman, everyone's heard of.
Definitely. The big guys.
But it lets you see them in a completely different light, like a what-if kind of scenario.
And it's anchored by the Batman and Flash relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of anchored. Like, and if you wanted to, all of Flashpoint had a million tie-ins, you know?
Oh, yeah. Massive
amount of tie-ins. And I read a lot of them. And some of them were absolutely brilliant. The Batman stuff by Azzarello was fantastic.
The other thing is this story actually kind of gives you an origin for the Flash as well.
Yeah.
In a sense, because he does try to get his powers back.
That's fine.
By replicating the accident that happened originally.
And succeeds on the second time.
Yeah, but that first time was brutal,
wasn't it? It was rough, wasn't it?
He ends up with like third-degree burns all over his body from lightning.
And luckily he has the healing factor that came in handy.
Well, once it happens the second time.
Yeah.
The Flash has a bit of a healing factor, but...
I didn't know that, actually, that the Flash had the healing factor.
Well, everything's kind of sped up.
Yeah.
So it's not a healing factor, it's just normal human healing.
Okay.
But it's sped up like the Flash is.
Oh, okay. I liked... How do you say his name? Is it Eobard Thawne? Is that how you say it?
Eobard Thawne.
Eobard Thawne. He's in this, and he's a big part of the final reveal.
Yeah.
And I really like that part of the storyline. It was really tight storytelling.
Yeah. No, a great villain told well.
Unfortunately, this leads to New 52, and there's kind of a cheesy moment at the end where you sort of see that happening. And that look, that's just part and parcel of this comic. This was the transition from the old DC universe into New 52.
Yeah.
And sort of, but really, honestly, no matter what you think of New 52, and I know there's a lot of critics and a lot of lovers out there, this event by itself really is quite a good event. I found it very enjoyable. I've read a lot of DC events, some of which, like Crisis, the original Crisis, Stu and I hated.
Yeah.
Whereas this is modernized, it's fun. This was honestly a good event. Like Geoff Johns loves The Flash. I think Flash fans, this is a must read.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Embarrassed.
I mean, if you're a Flash fan, you've already read this. Let's be honest.
I'm sure you have. But, you know, some people have just come on the TV show kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
it's fantastic if you've seen the TV show.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Eobard thought it was a big part of the TV show.
Huge.
And this kind of shows you the potential of that character and interdimensional travel.
He's a real prick.
He's a real dick, yeah. But this is a really fun little read. It's
And the
moment at the end with handing over the letter from Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, that's big.
That's a big moment.
I actually think that's one of the best parts. Like, I enjoy the whole event. I give it an 8.5. Like, as an event, I love it. But I love that very much message in a bottle feel of that moment. I always felt that was one of the best parts of this comic. And the fact that Bruce has it in his Batcave.
Yeah, and still has it.
I reckon that's fucking awesome.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
That must blow his mind, though. Can you imagine you coming back after a night of beating down villains and you're looking at the letter from your father from an alternate dimension?
Yeah.
That, like a bubble dimension to you. I'd be going, man, this is a fucking trip.
But there's kind of these two dimensions that complement each other perfectly.
Mm.
Like, there's one dimension where both his parents are alive and well and he died. Yes. And there's the other one that he's in where he survived and both his parents died.
I've got a question.
And there's kind of that unspoken hope that he'll be able to meet them.
Yeah.
And that's...
Now, I've got a question. When we did the button event, if you remember...
Yep.
Bruce didn't know about that. I always thought Bruce knew about the letter at the end of Flashpoint. Well, he does. But it seemed like by the button event, he'd forgotten about it. Do you remember? Like, it was like... How the fuck does Tom King justify having Flashpoint Thomas Wayne at the end of the thing of the wedding where he's behind Bane as like a plotter against Batman? That's what I was saying to you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Remember I was saying to you, why would Thomas Wayne, who loves Bruce, even when he hears that he has a son called Bruce who became Batman, he writes that really touching letter, and he's just, he actually sacrifices everything, you know, because he knows this world is worthless.
Yeah.
And that guy is not going to then turn on Batman.
No.
You know, like, there's no real way that's going to happen. And it's not, and what I hated, it wasn't explained in Batman. It was just like, oh yeah, he's just there as window dressing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it was, and then it's moved on. Like, instantly. Along with Skeets. Also not explained.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, but that's nothing to
do with this. No, this story is a much better telling of Thomas Wayne's Batman.
Oh, it's great. And if you, and honestly, I will give you this tip, readers. I read most of the Flashpoint tie-ins. Not many of them I remember, but I do remember that the Brian Azzarello stuff, it's like a three-parter. It's some of the best Batman I've read inside the last 20 years. Like, it's right up there. It's a really dark tale, but it's very good. He's a flat-out, like, gambling magnate. It's not really spelled out in Flashpoint, but in his own thing, he's like a full-on, like, he owns casinos and stuff. Like, he's kind of slightly corrupt.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, and yeah, he's like, not super healthy. Like, he's got, like, almost, like, heart problems and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I love this event. It's an 8.5 for me. Well, love is maybe too strong term. I very much like this event. I kind of wish it had led to a better universe. Like, I'm not a big fan of New 52 in a lot of ways, but I think this event shouldn't be judged by that. It's just a good event in itself.
No, I'd view this as a separate event prior to New 52 coming in.
I remember the storyline was that potentially Dan DeDio and that seized on this event and went, oh, we can put this at the end. Like, Jim Lee and Dan DeDio were kind of like, oh, this is a good opportunity for us to reboot everything, like, just at the end. It was just open enough that they could sort of then do... And everything sort of changed.
Yeah, I mean, potentially. And, I mean, that this is why I've been advocating for them to do this in the DC Universe.
Yeah.
You can change what you want to change and keep what you want to keep.
Well, they did that, Stu. They've done it several times now. Like, they did it with New 52. They did it with Rebirth.
No, I'm talking about the DC Universe. Like,
oh, sorry, the films.
Film Universe.
Oh, 100%, DC EU. Oh, yeah, and that was heavily canvassed. I think that was on the table. Yeah.
And this is why. Because this itself, great movie. You've got Aquaman and Wonder Woman as main characters.
Yeah.
So you could still have those, like, Gal Gadot coming back as a villain.
Yeah.
For a film. You and have those actors. Momoa coming back as a villain. Yeah. Brilliant idea.
I think it's great.
Ezra Miller takes the lead. Fantastic. I like Ezra Miller.
Yep.
You can completely go pick a random-ass Batman.
Definitely, yeah.
Just cast well.
Yeah.
But a single one-off Batman.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing, like, a Baldwin maybe pull it off.
Alec.
Someone a little older. Wow. Could be Alec. Alec would be awesome.
Jeez. Big, big move for Alec Baldwin.
I wouldn't mind seeing that.
I'd love to see him play Batman.
Big Thomas Wayne kind of imposing.
Yeah definitely.
Yeah.
Great.
But, so, you know,
get into that suit.
Yeah, you'd have a bit of a... It'd be a job.
Okay, yeah. But he can lose weight at times. I've seen Alec Baldwin at times. He's trimmer than other times.
His
weight goes up and down a little bit.
But I'm thinking of an actor that's got his kind of caliber, that kind of age.
Yeah. Bit of gravitas to him.
Oh, yeah.
And personality. Alec Baldwin has a lot of personality in his style.
And I imagine he would be a fantastic Thomas Wayne. Not necessarily a great Batman, but I think Thomas Wayne.
I'd love it. I mean, he was rumoured for the Joker movie, wasn't he? Before he cancelled it when clearly he didn't get what he wanted.
Yeah.
What was I going to say to you? Oh, I've got one point, story point. So, in the end, when it's revealed how it happened, that Flash went back in time to save his mother, was that from... That may have been from another Geoff Johns Flash comic or something. It had a feeling like it had happened before. And he went back, he ran back in time to himself and said, don't save her. Because that's what triggered everything. Do you think that was from another Flash comic or he just created it in that moment? It had a feel like it had probably happened.
No, I'm reasonably sure it was in another comic.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's cool. Another award for readers who've been readers of The Flash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm reading through Mark Waid's Flash. I'm up to book 4. And then I'm going to read Geoff Johns' Flash. And I don't love the Flash character. I like him, but there's some really cool stories in there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he's a good example of, like, when I think of Flash, I was always like, Mike Barron had a great run of Flash. And I was always like, really? The Flash can run fast? Yeah, but, like, you tell good stories with good characters, and he has a lot of good relationships as well.
For me, it's also being able to explore what his powers can do.
Yeah.
With people like Superman, he's just got every power under the sun.
Yeah.
But when you look at The Flash, you can just speed up what humans can normally do.
Yeah, you can vibrate through stuff. They make a big deal about that.
I mean, vibrating through things is awesome. Being able to run through dimensions, awesome.
That's cool.
Like, anything, like healing because his body, his metabolism's sped up.
Yeah.
how fast he can process things, how smart he is.
And he has a very good rogues gallery that Geoff Johns built up a lot.
Amazing rogues gallery.
And a good Flash family that Mark Waid made a good deal of. Like, you know, he brought in Impulse Bart, Jay Garrick, you know, not he didn't invent him, but he brought him into the scene a lot more.
Yeah.
No, Flash is a very good comic book character. I'm learning that. I'm reading through the Mark Waid stuff and I'm enjoying it, and then I'm going to go to the Geoff Johns stuff. It's just kind of
he feels kind of like that. I don't want to say it, but a sleeper character.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like, you expect Batman to be good.
Yes.
And you expect runs of Superman and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and those sort of big people to be really good, but Flash is just consistently a great character.
In the 90s, when basically, like, the core of the 90s, like, I was reading Green Lantern, who was Kyle Rayner at the time, with Ron Marks. Very readable comic. I'm not saying it was like world's greatest, but it was very readable week to week. Flash was done by Mark Waid, and everyone knew it was a good title. I just had a thing about the Flash. I was like, I'm not walking the stone by Flash.
Yeah.
But Chuck Dixon was doing Green Arrow, and not Oliver Queen, Connor Hawke. And I've read so many of those issues, and they are fucking awesome. It just showed me that really a good writer and a good art team can take characters and lift them, you know, and do a lot of things. And you're right, Flash actually has a lot of possibilities. And Mark Waid and Geoff Johns explore that to the fullest.
Yeah.
I'm giving it an 8.5 as an event in itself.
Yeah, as a standalone thing, I'm giving it a 9. Yeah.
It's another hit from you, Stu. I mean, how are you feeling right now? You're like the fucking Beatles. Like,
I mean, this was easy picking, be honest.
I mean, it was low hanging fruit. I'm a little bit more experimental, and a couple of times that's cost me.
Yeah, a couple of times
A couple of times that's come back to haunt me. But now, Stu, we've had a shorter show this week, so you should be happy. You're always whinging about how you want the shows to be shorter. The show should be shorter. But, like, I'll let you know, by the way, that we have listeners who just love our longer stuff. I mean, these are the guys with long drives. Some of them have got shaky marriages.
I like that you're laughing at people with shaky marriages.
I'm laughing because I'm
just a terrible person.
I'm laughing because I'm fucking joking.
You're a terrible person.
I mean, I'm in a good mood. Australia won a fucking cricket match, finally. Jesus.
Yeah, you know, won't last. I give it one. I give it one match.
Well, there's one more match. You know, guess what? It's the second one-day match we won this year. How bad's that? It's like back in...
See, normally we're saying this in January.
Yeah, I know.
Unfortunately, it's November. That's unfortunate.
And we only just won. We snuck across the line. But anyway, so I'm looking forward to tomorrow. There's the final match on. Now, Stu, I've got a pick for next week. I had a couple of ones, but we've decided on DC versus Marvel, the 1996 event. This is gold, Stu. This is people were voting in on who was going to win fights. This is right up my alley.
Yeah, this is another low-hanging fruit. Easy pick. Brilliant.
I actually think it might be... This is... Because I think it kind of sucks today that, like, DC and Marvel don't want to do crossovers. Like, I don't understand. Like, Disney and Warner's, like, I get their corporate giants against each other, but weren't they always competitors, DC and Marvel? Like, they were never owned by the same publishing house.
No, they've always been competitors.
Yeah, so I'm sort of like... But you hear today that, like, people are like, oh, no, there's no way that'll ever happen again. Apparently it's, like, it's so distant a possibility, like, it can't possibly be imagined kind of thing. I'm like, really? Okay, well, it was imagined in 1996 and we're doing it. So that's for next week. Stu, any wrap-up thoughts for the audience? Any pearls of wisdom? I mean, and let's not forget, Stu's now 1-0 down in the captain's call and Conan's coming ever closer, Stu. Do you want me to give you the book? Do you want me to give you the book so that you can start reading? Start getting a bit of a heads up. It's going to be a fucking big book.
I'm glad you're confident this week.
What's up this week? I forget. What do we do? Oh, well, we're not revealing
it. We're not revealing it. I'm just...
So next... Okay. Just so readers, fucking listeners know. So next week, after next week's show, I'll put the poll out.
Next week we'll have our number 6 picks going up.
So what's this week? Just nothingness. Just anticipation.
This week...
Just hollow exhaustion.
I mean, this is a topic of frustration because every week Dave asks me what the fuck's going on and I tell him what's going on and yet every week he seems to forget what's going on.
But, like, I feel like you don't want to overtax the voters. You're like a politician. You don't want to bring them back to the polls too often.
Well, if you really want to reveal our hand, the plan was to get our number ones on episode 100.
Okay.
But cool. Dave can't remember this because it's a big deal.
Well, I think it's a great fucking...
You're an idiot, Dave. You're an idiot.
This is episode 87.
You're just letting everyone down again.
No, I'm not. Something. Guess who's watched... You know what?
Hang on. Finish that statement.
I will.
What have you watched, Dave?
I've watched three and a half episodes of Titans, which is three and more half episodes than you've watched.
That is true.
Thank you.
Have you finished Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Daredevil.
No.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
No.
Nothing? Nothing?
No.
Yeah,
I've watched
a disappointment.
More Daredevil. I've watched more Daredevil.
Oh, yeah, well done. Have you finished it?
No, I haven't.
Disappointment. I'm glad you brought this topic up, though, Dave. Thank you for this.
3.5 episodes of Titans I've watched.
I mean,
I've watched that. I've watched the Doom Patrol episode. So, you know, really, both of us are wrong. Really, is anyone right?
Well, how about this, Dave? By next week, I'll have watched up to date. I'll be up to date on Titans.
Good for you.
Will you have watched any of those shows?
I will have watched,
because you're 3.5 shows down
watched,
now.
I will have watched more of Daredevil for sure.
You're 3 and shows down and a movie.
Potentially, Ant-Man and the Wasp. We're going to probably, that could be a viewing. It could be a viewing, because you got me when you said Michelle Pfeiffer's got a de-age scene. So that sort of led me back to that trough.
You're just disappointing.
Oh, well. Anyway, who cares? Next week, we'll be back. Good night, kids. Bye-bye. Yeah.
I was talking to Chuck in his Genghis Khan suit and his wizard's hat. He spoke of his movie and how he was making a new soundtrack. And then we spoke of kids on the coast and different types of organic soap and the way suicides don't leave notes. Then we spoke of the rain, always back to the rain. I was speaking to Phil, who was given to pills and small racing cars. He had given them up since his last crack up had carried him too far. Then we spoke of movies and bursts, and the way an actress held her purse, and the way life at times could get worse. Then we spoke of the rain, always back to the rain. Oh, she's a wild child, and nobody can. Chills, but she calmed down after some wine, which is what happens most of the time. Then we sat and both spoke and rhymed till we spoke of the rain. Oh, it's always back to the rain. I was talking to Ed, who'd been reported dead by that I had no money to spend on him. So we both shared a piece of sweet cheese and sang of our lives and our dreams and how things can come apart at the seams. And we talked of the rain.